This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. There was the financial meltdown, the bailout, the Occupy movement. And with the economy still pretty stagnant, you don't have to go far to find someone who's not very happy with their banks. And yet about 130 million people, that's roughly 40% of Americans, are doing their banking with either Wells Fargo or Bank of America. I know, I feel like it's either that or under the mattress, right, Cheryl?
So yep.
Our financial advisor, Cheryl Marshall, is here. She's our go-to source for everything money. So what is the deal, Cheryl? Is it better to go bigger because, you know, that's, or can you get trapped if you go with a small bank?
Like everything else, there's no single answer, okay? It depends what you're looking for. If you want 24/7 access, then you want a big bank. State-of-the-art technology, then you want a big bank. If you want to support local institutions, small bank, and have old-fashioned relationship with bankers, just like the movies, you go to a small bank. If you travel frequently and need global ATMs or currency exchange, or you move around a lot for your job, you want a big bank, because then you're going to have access. You won't have to change your bank accounts if you move. And most of the big banks have relationships with the large foreign banks, so you will end up not paying ATM fees overseas. And also, are you angry at the big banks?
No, I know. That's the only reason. Because honestly, even if you're none of the things you just said, let's just say you're just your average person who lives in a community, but maybe you do travel every now and then, either out of the country or to California or something. You got to have some universal way of accessing your accounts, your money. I can't see just being, putting all my money in one small community bank like Winter Hill or something that's not universal. I can't see it.
Well, here's the small banks have recognized that, and the credit unions. Let's not leave credit unions out of this conversation. And they have formed a network where there are 40,000 fee-free ATMs. So they are dealing with what the customer wants, which is not having to pay an ATM fee. On the other hand, they still don't have them, let's say globally. They don't have the reach that the Wells Fargo's and the Bank of America's have. So if you're in Kathmandu haggling to buy something, you won't have to go into the local bodega and pay a $20 fee
to
get your own money, which makes me crazy. So again, there's pluses and minuses, but they do have a pretty good network, nationally for fee-free ATMs, the small banks and the credit unions.
All right, we're going to be taking people's calls today to our Everything Money Maven. Cheryl Marshall is here. We're talking big versus small. That applies to everything. By the way, investments, firms as well. Do you go with one of the big ones like Morgan Stanley, or do you have your little financial guy who's just kind of helping you out? So we want all your questions, Everything Money, 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Also, some of your stories, good and bad, about dealing with, maybe a credit union versus a big bank. What is a thrift bank? What does that mean?
Well, banks are divided into two categories. There's savings and loans, okay, and then there's just regular small banks. So a thrift bank is generally, a savings and loan bank. If I'm not mistaken, it's just a moniker that was left over from, the early days of banking.
I never understood what that meant. Just a moniker. What about investments? Everybody has sort of... It's one thing to have your guy, somebody who you sort of talk to.
Or your woman.
No, I meant that in a generic term. You know what I mean? Putting it all in like a Schwab or a Fidelity or a
Morgan Stanley.
There's
three categories. Okay, one, you've got the big boys, okay, which are the Merrill Lynch's, the Morgan Stanley's of the world, and even at this point, a Bank of America or Wells Fargo, who also give investment advice. Then you have these one-off investment advisors, and many of them aren't one-off. Many of them have, quite large firms at this point to give advice. And the third are what I call the hybrids, which are the Fidelities and the Schwabs that do everything. They deal with both the smallest investor, the largest investor, the online investor, the offline investor. And again, that depends. And a lot of it has to do with what your needs are. Once again, like the big banks, the big brokerage firms are going to have state-of-the-art technology, a vast array of products, many of them not good for you, okay? Because they are selling products in the way that Procter & Gamble sells soap, and they sell it to their clients.
Like what?
Well, certain kinds of hedge funds and private equity funds. And they are supposed to do due diligence in all these funds before they pass them on to clients, but Bernie Madoff. I rest my case.
The only thing that drives me crazy are those big investment firms. We've talked about this before, is the fees. If you're not all over that,
right,
you're paying fees up the yin-yang.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to talk to you about, too. A lot of this, you know, there isn't as much transparency as you would like, and many times you're paying double fees and you don't even know about it.
I think that was me.
with many individual investment advisors, one of the reasons I like them is that they give you a clear fee based on the assets under management. They generally don't have conflicts of interest. They're not trying to push a product on you, and their interests are more closely aligned with yours. So if the value of your account goes up, then the fee that they get goes up.
And
that is, you know, to me, much more straightforward. But the problem is a lot of investment advisors don't deal with the smaller investor. So what does one do then? And I'm a huge fan of Fidelity and Schwab for the smaller investor. First of all, they give excellent education. They don't charge a lot. Both of them have, you know, fantastic arrays of mutual funds for the small investor to choose from. And that's where, you know, when people just ask me over a dinner conversation, that's what I tell them to do.
All right, talking to our Everything Money maven, Cheryl Marshall. We're taking your phone calls today about big versus small, the big investment houses versus the small, you know, individual banker, investor, advisor, you know, the big banks. Do you go with the Bank of America or one of those, Citibank, versus your round-the-corner Commerce or one of those? Taking your phone calls, 877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. We've got Polly from Marblehead. Go ahead, Polly.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Okay, I just wanted to say that I deal with my local bank, which is Salem 5. It has branches, I don't know, in eastern Massachusetts or certainly along the coast in Massachusetts. I pay no ATM fees,
right,
no matter where I am.
That's correct.
None ever. And I can't imagine why anybody would deal with a bank like Bank America, which we had to bail out when there are all these wonderful smaller banks.
Okay, but wait. What if you are in, say, Idaho?
I'm in Europe.
Yeah.
If I'm in Idaho, if I'm in Europe, if I'm in South America, Mexico, Canada, it doesn't matter. If I have to pay an ATM fee, they reimburse it at the end of the month.
They do?
Yes, and I have been to all those places and had those ATM fees reimbursed.
That's interesting.
Really? That's
do you have a big account? Is it Holly?
No,
Polly.
No, it's
Polly.
Very small.
Do you have a large account?
No, it's very small.
Oh, well, that's really wonderful to hear. I'm delighted to hear that.
A great bank, and I just think that more people should look into the smaller local bank, where you get very personalized service.
Well, also, one of the nice things about small banks is that they really do stabilize communities in many ways, because the person that you're asking for a loan for example, if you were a small business, you're going to meet that person. You're going to shake that person's hand versus going through, you know, miles and miles of paperwork and bureaucracy at the larger banks. So it's not just that they are giving you good service, it's that they really add value to the communities by being in the local communities.
That's good to know. All right, thanks, Polly. Salem 5.
I just wanted to say one thing. It's because I have direct deposit that I get those.
Okay. That's okay, though.
Okay.
People should have that, and they don't.
Yeah,
they're so
exactly.
Cashing their checks, yeah. All right, thanks, Polly. So we've got another comment here on our Facebook page, Cheryl. This is Carrie. She says, we've been credit union members for the past 10 years, and I wouldn't ever go back to a big bank, considering it took them over a year to cancel an account because no one knew what to do. I had the exact same experience as Carrie. My bank was Citizens. I don't mind telling. It took almost 15 years for me to get some money out of there because nobody knew what to do. You know, they're sending me to probate court. Probate is not the law in Massachusetts. I'm arguing this with them. It was just awful.
It's complicated. Credit unions are really the best of the best. Most of them, remember, they are member-owned. So you have to be a member of the credit union as such. You're a shareholder.
How does that work?
Of a credit union.
Yeah.
Well, if you remember, you know, they were originally started out for large companies in many cases, you know, for people to cash their checks, deposit, and borrow funds. And many of them are still affiliated. For example, there was a Filene's Credit Union for years that I used to walk by on Winter Street on my way to work. And now there's a whole bunch of other ones. And one has to check on what the quote-unquote affiliation requirements are right now, if any.
Don't you have to pay dues or no?
No. A lot of them have relaxed them. But in my homework, what I discovered was the credit unions, out of everybody, small banks, big banks, and everything, have the lowest rates on credit cards and the highest rates on CDs. So credit unions really are, you know, a very, very good place to do business with. And additionally, they are also part of this network that our prior caller was calling about in terms of, you know, accessing ATMs all over the country.
And they'll do it for free, as far as you know.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Free. As long as they're in the network. Yes.
Taking your calls today from Cheryl Marshall, 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. We want to hear your experiences dealing with a big bank versus a little bank, a big investment firm versus a little one. We've got Betty from Cape Cod. Go ahead, Betty.
Hi. My question is, if you want to leave a big bank, how do you really know which bank in your area is a small bank? Because they all seem to, some of them seem to have other affiliations that you can't really figure out.
Good point.
That's a great question. One of the places that you can go to take a look in this, I assume that you have a computer, is that you go to the FDIC site, which gives you a lot of information on these smaller banks. And also bankrate.com, which is my favorite website for checking out all these things.
Bankrate.com. Now, that's a nerdy website.
I always give that one to put up on the GBH website. Also has a vast storehouse of information. Or you can just Google the name of the bank and you can find that out. But I think that that's an excellent question because you want to know who you're doing business with. And I don't know about you. I live in Newton and I feel like a bank is opening on, you know, every single corner, not to mention the Upper West Side of New York, where the residents are just despairing because every empty storefront is becoming a bank.
Yeah, that's true on Charles Street, too. They have a big tussle there that, you know.
And why, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Betty. Why do they need so many banks? That is an excellent question.
Well, Europe has way less banks than we have in America. I mean, you know, many people think that this country was overbanked even before we had the crisis. There's an opportunity. I mean, you know, it's supply and demand,
really?
Evidently.
I mean, isn't everybody doing everything online? I mean, what the heck?
No, not everyone is doing everything online. And even if people are doing things online, you still need a banking presence. When I bought a car, I needed to get a cashier's check. The only way you can do that is go to a bank.
Yeah.
Because the wiring fee was so obscene.
Oh,
I refused to pay it.
$25.
It just really annoyed me.
I know, really annoyed me,
it
too.
It just annoyed the heck out of me. They're sitting there with all my money making interest.
It took them 10 minutes to pay
$25 for a wiring fee. I said, I'm not doing this. And I went to the bank and I got a free cashier's check because, you know, my balance was high enough.
Yeah.
That really, you know how certain things push
it does,
your buttons?
I do know what you mean.
Push my button.
Okay. Let's see. We're taking your calls today. 877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. And we're talking big versus small banks, big versus small investment firms. I mean, in the end, if you're investing with somebody, aren't they eventually taking your money?
What does that
passing?
Mean?
Yeah, let's say you've got a financial advisor.
So
and
Emily,
they don't walk into the doors of Morgan Smith's.
So Emily, I see you like people that have a storeroom of mattresses.
No. I'm talking about people who don't work for one of the big firms.
Right. Well, what they do is they have clearing houses and they have back office companies that supply back office operations. For example, a lot of independent advisors use a back office operation.
Exactly. So they're, for all intents and purposes, they're part of a bigger operation.
Right. But there's critical differences between banks and the individual firms, the credit unions and small banks in terms of safety, which is something that's very important to me. For example, for the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, which we talked about before, insures all bank account holders, that's in small banks, big banks, anywhere, for losses up to $250,000, regardless of what caused the loss, meaning the bank burnt with all the money in it, okay, the vault was blown up, the bank went belly up, you know, anything. The SIPC, Securities Investor Protection Corporation, which only insures brokerage accounts, not financial advisor accounts, will only reimburse investors in the event of a broker-dealer insolvency. So think, let's see, who went insolvent? Lehman Brothers, okay? The SIPC will reimburse investors up to $500,000 of securities, of which up to $100,000 can be in cash. But The SIPC does not insure individual advisors, and the courts are the only recourse if you think you've been taken advantage of by an individual advisor. And federal credit unions have their own insurance fund, which is run by the National Credit Union Administration, NCUA. By the way, readers, listeners, it's going to be a test at the end
on
the initials. When you join a credit union, you don't really make a deposit. Instead, you become a member of the credit union, and the dollars you put in are called shares. If your credit union is insured by the NCUSIF, your shares are insured in a similar way, the way bank deposits are insured by the FDIC. So if you do have accounts with credit unions, you want to make sure that they have this insurance.
Mm, that's interesting. All right, taking your phone calls today, 877-301-8970, talking about big versus small banks, big versus small investment firms. And we've got Mike from Boston. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello. I'd like to ask your guest why she didn't include Vanguard along with Fidelity and Schwab as one of the places that's really good for small investors, because it has some of the lowest fees and the greatest number of funds to choose from.
Do you work for them, Mike?
I love Vanguard. And the reason I didn't include Vanguard, it was an era of omission versus an era of commission, because I've kind of categorized this talk into the big brokerage firms and the hybrid firms like Fidelity Schwab that do everything, and didn't really single out, you know, single mutual fund companies. But Vanguard is a phenomenal, phenomenal company. They have the lowest fees. You can open an account directly with Vanguard, or you can buy Vanguard funds through other brokers. And thank you for mentioning that, because
Vanguard does have a brokerage section. You can buy stocks at Vanguard also.
Yes, but they don't have the huge full range of services that these other firms do.
I think you might look into that, because I think they do. I've been on the phone with Vanguard. Agent for quite a while, and has been explained all the different services they have. They are expanding their services, their brokerage services, and all kinds of services.
Okay, well, that's good.
I'm just a small investor, but I really love Vanguard.
Yeah, no, it's a great firm, and that's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Taking your calls today, 877-301-8970. All things money with our money maven, Cheryl Marshall. We're talking big versus small investment firms and banks. And we've got John from Malden on the line. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Emily and Cheryl. I'm just wondering why there's no talk yet about fee-only advisors. I go to one, and I was able to retire at 60.
What does that mean?
Right. I didn't have the right advisor.
What's a fee-only advisor?
That's exactly what I was talking about before, although I didn't exactly say that's what it was. When I talked about that, you know, their fees are tied in with your wealth, so they have your interests are aligned. I mean, I think fee-only advisors are excellent.
I don't understand.
Some of them charge in different ways. Some of them are hybrids. They're, you know, broker-dealers, or they also do brokerage, or, you know, whatever. But fee-only advisors, if you have a good advisor, that, you know, they're super duper.
Yeah.
They want you to do well. Yeah.
It's Jennifer Lane, and she's just been terrific, absolutely terrific.
Well, I'm glad
her fees are very reasonable.
Right.
And my partner, now husband, was working with Fidelity, and he was paying far more to Fidelity
than
I was paying.
That's really good to know. I mean, you know, really, at the end of the day, it all comes down to the person and what you're paying for, what the services are that you get. And particularly in Boston, which is a money capital in the world, I mean, we have wonderful fee-only advisors, really great ones.
What I think is unfortunate is that people that just have a little savings feel, when they're dealing with a big company, they're a small fish in a big ocean.
Well, they are, and that's why I suggest places, and the prior caller to a Vanguard or a Fidelity, because what happens is you can get your money eaten up by fees if you're not the right size, and that's a disadvantage.
What we have found is that Jennifer actually listens, just doesn't already have a pat answer. She actually listens to what the client says.
And that's a good advisor. It's about the person. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Do we have time for one
more? You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, Cheryl, we're going to go to your tip of the day. We can't leave our segment here. Everything
is,
money without
this is really important. You know, with this terrible economy, a lot of people are taking advantage of their IRA and 401k accounts to either take early withdrawals, take loans, or they're actually starting to take distributions. The tax laws are quite complicated on this, and it behooves you to check with either your accountant or even go online to the IRS website so that you have a thorough understanding of what's going to happen to you if you either take an early distribution or you start taking your withdrawals. It's very, very important. Make sure that you really understand that.
I mean, how bad is it? What kind
of a hit
do you take?
Well, for example, if you take an early distribution, not only are you paying regular tax rates, you have a 10% penalty.
Wow.
So you really have to pay attention. There's a lot of bells and whistles. You know, nothing with these things is
easy.
No,
I know people who are just wiping them out.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, and they're getting killed. They're going to get killed in taxes.
Yeah, it's sad. All right. Okay, we're going to have to take the rest of this discussion to the web. Thanks to all of our callers. If we didn't get to you, the conversation continues on Facebook. Head to facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. Thanks to our financial expert for everything money, Cheryl Marshall. And speaking of money, the cartooning duo who created Superman, two kids from Cleveland. Well, they sold the rights to this epic superhero for a mere $130. Ugh. That's just one factoid among so many interesting ones that are behind the story of the muscle-bound legend. It's the subject of Larry Tye's new book, A Biography of Superman. Kelly Crossley has got that conversation for you. I'm Emily Rooney, and this is Boston Public Radio.